Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast powered by betonline.ag. I am your fearless leader, Todd Furman, joined as always by the man, the myth, the legend, Payne Insider. What's going on, my good man?
Not too much. Nice little Wednesday morning. Get to talk some college football with you fine fellas today. So
I don't know if that's always a good thing, but I will say it's a lot easier and more enjoyable to do these podcasts when we're picking winners. That is for damn sure.
Much easier to wake up, but you got to be the same human whether you're going well or going bad. Hopefully we don't have bad this weekend, but you got to stay even keel.
No doubt about it. It becomes maintaining that level playing field, not getting too high or getting too low. And of course, that goes to all of our loyal listeners. Don't celebrate the successes and scream them from the hilltops when you win. And don't let any of those losing weekends put you in the dumps by any stretch. This can be a business that chews you up and spits you out. But enough PSA talk, Payne. I want to just revisit some of the stuff that we saw last weekend in college football. And we took a little bit of heat in our weekly Outkick the Coverage column talking about the LSU Tigers as the most overrated team in the country.
Are they not?
I mean, I still think they are. I mean, I'm not going to say anything to the contrary, having watched them play Louisiana Tech last weekend.
There's always these teams that seem to be a thorn in our side. Like every year, there's a team or two, whether it's the NFL or college football. And no matter how good the matchup is on paper, or no matter how good the information on a game is, they just seem to pull something out of their asses to defy the odds. And again, I saw that this weekend. I was looking at some of these metrics. Both teams had the same amount of snaps, 76, and Louisiana Tech outgains LSU on a yards per play basis. I just think they're fortunate, right, to be 4-0. And you start to look at some of these metrics and project out the rest of the way. 8 wins is still their likeliest result. 9 certainly achievable. But when I look at this right now, they're going to be underdogs in 5 of the remaining 8 games still, despite this start.
Oh, give me a little bit of a lifeline. Give me an Ole Miss upset this weekend and our win total under 7.5. Comes back from the DNR list to potentially being in just critical condition, if we're using hospital terminology. I want to take a shot real quick at Virginia Tech because we've been big Justin Fuente fans around here for years. And to go on the road, I had tip for even taking this game against an in-state rival in fertile recruiting territory, but you're a 4-touchdown favorite and you give up 40-plus points in that game. That just can't happen. And I have a friend who went to Virginia. He is the most unrealistic Virginia Cavaliers football fan there is, who told me this was the single biggest day for UVA football. They beat Louisville. Virginia Tech goes down in front of a bunch of recruits within the state. He said this could change the momentum for both programs going forward. I wanted to temper his expectations a bit, but that's not a loss you can have, especially in your own backyard.
Being an optimistic Cavaliers fan is tough. That takes a lot of homerism in the blood.
Well, especially after you lose as a 16 seed in the NCAA tournament, they need to try and grasp for any straw they can as part of the UVA athletic program.
Oof, that's ugly. I will say I did enjoy the game thoroughly and how many points Bud Foster's defense gave up.
Well, we knew it was going to be a question mark coming into the season. I didn't quite think Old Dominion would hang 40 plus in a game where the over under closed anywhere from 50.5 to 52. But enough about last week. Of course, now it's time to get down to a little brass tacks, the real meat and potatoes of the Bet the Board podcast. And to do that, we bring in the third member of this talented trio, the one, the only, Dusty Dvoracek. You can follow Dusty on Twitter at Dusty Dvoracek. And Dusty, I have to ask, I mean, ESPN's not making you travel this weekend for the game. How does that work out in terms of hotel accommodations? Is the per diem still on the table, or they go, you know what, Dusty, you're getting a home cooked meal. You just have to prepare it yourself.
The per diem better be on the table. We're inviting the whole crew over for the production meeting Friday night. So that's coming out of my pocket. I need as much per diem as I could possibly get. So it is a pseudo home game. You know, last week was crazy. I had 4 games in 8 days. I was all over the place. And I don't know if it's a reward, but I get to stay home. I got Oklahoma Baylor here in Norman, where my family and I reside. So no airplanes, no airports this week, which is always nice. And you bet your bottom dollar I'm going to be looking for that per diem.
And we'll get your quick thoughts on the Oklahoma-Baylor game before we close up shop. But we may as well start with a game that was fascinating to begin with and now has an added level of intrigue down in Death Valley, where it's Clemson, an overwhelming favorite against an undefeated Syracuse team. Clemson right now at 23.5-point chalk at betonline.ag. Total on this game has ballooned out to 67. And Dusty, you've seen both of these teams, and we've talked about it at great lengths on this podcast. Kelly Bryant was limited in what he could do with the offense. The announcement that I think all of us thought was coming, we just weren't sure when it was going to happen. Trevor Lawrence, now the heir apparent to lead the Clemson Tigers.
Yeah, you know, and I had this game on ABC last week, Georgia Tech, Clemson at Georgia Tech. And, you know, guys, going into the game, just watching the tape, I thought there was a big difference when Trevor Lawrence runs the offense at Kelly Bryant. It's just more multidimensional. He pushes the ball down the field. Decision-making's quick. The RPO game is lethal. And he's got some talented wide receivers outside. And so going into the game, I already thought Lawrence was the better player. And, man, did it ever play out that way in front of my very eyes. Five of his six possessions, they scored touchdowns. He has four touchdown passes. He made a throw on the opening series where they roll him to his left, squares his shoulders, and he hits Hunter Renfrow in the corner of the end zone. I mean, he just throws it on a rope. I mean, it's a throw that very few people can make in college football. And by the end of the broadcast, I mean, I was very forthright, and I was saying, Trevor Lawrence is the guy here in Clemson. And I think that the Clemson coaches clearly, Dabo Swinney, though it was tough for him to do, he saw exactly what I had seen. And they made the move to Trevor Lawrence. And I just say, good luck defenses trying to deal with this offense, because you got a home run hitter in Travis Etienne. You've got big-time wide receivers on the outside and T. Higgins, true freshman Justin Ross, and Amari Rodgers that can really give defenses trouble. And now you've got a quarterback who can really make every throw on the football field, and don't sleep on his athleticism. So one of the most talented teams in college football, in my estimation, they only got better now that they went with their best quarterback as their starter and the true freshman Trevor Lawrence.
Kane, how does the change of quarterback change the overall power profile? I know Clemson started the year number one in your power rankings for the column that we do every week at Outkick the Coverage. Drop them down below Alabama, maybe not necessarily an indictment of Clemson. But what does this do for the season-long outlook and obviously this weekend in terms of how you assess Clemson and their overall merits?
Yeah, I believe we moved them down, right? I think fourth is what we had them after the last couple weeks. Didn't really love what we saw from the offense. And this was just a matter of time. Everyone knew this was coming. Kelly Bryant did show an ability to lead an efficient offense, but there was just no explosiveness there. And the efficiency for Bryant actually dipped year over year. And when I looked at this four-game sample this season and compared Lawrence to Bryant, who they basically have the same number of snaps under center in that 120 range, it's crystal clear, I think, who gives them the highest upside, who gives them the best chance to win a championship, and that's Trevor Lawrence. Right now, Clemson's offense with Lawrence under center is averaging 1.7 more yards per play and 1.7 more points per drive. So this really was a no-brainer for Dabo.
I think, guys, when we obviously look at this game, we know Clemson is going to have a massive offensive advantage against Syracuse defensively. But full credit to Dino Babers' team. They've improved on that side of the ball. They're tied second nationally with 7 interceptions. Tied for fifth with number one Alabama and Colorado in red zone defense, only allowing 5 touchdowns, and tied for 12th in the country with 13 sacks. For me, I want to look at the other side of the ball. And last year, we know Clemson went up there on a fateful Friday night, 23-point favorites, lost outright 27-24 in a game where Kelly Bryant wasn't able to finish. But Dusty, when I look at Eric Dungy and how explosive this Syracuse offense can be, the NASCAR offense, so to speak, against this Clemson defense, we've only seen Clemson secondary play one team that can throw a downfield pass, and they gave up 433 yards to Texas A&M. Will Clemson struggle to slow Syracuse down?
I think they'll struggle a little bit, right? This is a patience-based offense. They want to go as fast as they possibly can. And with Dino Babers, they will go fast. Eric Dungy, he's one of the more talented players that doesn't get the acclaim or doesn't get the headlines. And he can kind of be his own worst enemy. And, it's like what makes him great also is his biggest weakness, because He's built like a linebacker. He's about 230, 235. He's added what he calls some body armor because he doesn't get down. He doesn't get out of bounds. He's got that. He's built like a linebacker, and he thinks he's a linebacker, but he's playing quarterback. So, you know, they've been trying to get him to get down, to protect himself, but they can't coach that out of him, right? The game that I called against Florida State, he got dinged up. He had to leave the game. So he needs to be smart here. Clemson's got dudes that run all over the field. So you best get out of bounds and you best get down so that you can give your offense an opportunity to function at its highest level. He's a dual threat guy. He's going to get outside the pocket. And he's clearly going to have the best defensive line in college football bearing down on him. I expect Cleveland Farrell to really, in particular, I think there's some matchups with those offensive tackles that he's going to be able to exploit and have quite a bit of success. But that defensive line is legit. They can really run. But the one thing, like you mentioned, that secondary, it's been tested once, and Kellen Mond, little mop. So if Eric Dungy can buy himself some time and he can get the football down the field, they've got a big target in Jamal Custis, a smaller guy in Sean Riley, who's that possession guy who'll make you miss and move the chains, and then Nykeem Johnson. You know, all three of these wide receivers have really been utilized throughout the year. It's really going to be on the offensive line to give him time. And when Eric Dungy has the opportunity, he needs to protect himself. If he can do that, I don't think Syracuse can win this game, but I think that offense can have some success enough to potentially keep it inside that number.
Payne, two things I want to ask you about before we close the book here on this game. One, the revenge angle and how much we should account for that when we handicap a lot of these conference games that we're about to get into in late September and October. And this line move, we saw it open as low as 19.5 in some spots and balloon out to that 23.5 where it is at betonline.ag and even 24. Are you surprised by the strength of the move on Clemson?
You know, two things here. The revenge angle is certainly an added element to your handicap, but it's not something you're going to live and die by. And we have seen a massive move here as low as 19.5 out to 24, and then the total as well. And I just think, you know, you look at Syracuse, and we've mentioned this, sixth in adjusted pace, and I get that's their style under Babers. But when you step up in class, if you can't be efficient, that pace is going to get you blown out. And I think when we look at the total, we've mentioned this already, Clemson's defense, you can attack their secondary. That's the weak spot of an otherwise fantastic defense. It's a great defensive line. They're crushing quarterbacks right now. They have the highest sack rate in the country. But the secondary is still vulnerable despite that. 117th in defensive pass efficiency, 83rd in explosive pass defense. That Clemson secondary can be had. So if Eric Dungy has to make some plays when the opportunities arise. He needs to be efficient. He needs to be an explosive passer. The offensive line, there are some question marks, but they've done a pretty good job on standard down. So I think, you know, if Babers is smart here, he's going to want to pass on first down rather than known passing situations where that Clemson D-line can pin their ears back knowing the pass is coming.
A lot to be said about trying to keep opposing defenses as talented as Clemson off balance. And Syracuse, to their credit, despite some of their struggles in recent years, the last 11 times they've gone on the highway, 8-3 against the spread. Should be a great way to kick things off Saturday, a game taking place at noon Eastern. From the start of the day to a game that's going to go a long way in defining not only the Big Ten East race, but also the quest for the college football playoff. It's Ohio State on the road in Happy Valley going into a whiteout, a 3.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in that game, 70.5. And Payne, I want to start with you because we talk all the time about home field advantage this, home field advantage that, a whiteout this, striping the stadium that. How much different is it handicapping a game being played at night in hostile territory like Beaver Stadium than if this game was kicking off at noon in terms of the adjustments you'll make to the number?
Certainly a factor, and I think the market is seeming to indicate that Penn State is the side here, and I get it. Revenge, Beaver Stadium at night, the full-blown whiteout, as you mentioned, Ohio State's first true road game of the season. It's a hostile environment. For me, you know, pro bettors that I respect think extremely highly of Penn State, and that's why I won't be on this game, but personally, I'm just a little down on PSU, right? Trace McSorley has to get the pass game going. You look at this, he's completing less than 54% of his passes so far. That's the worst mark since his freshman season. And his very best performance was against Pittsburgh. right? They rank 95th in defensive efficiency. So he hasn't really played anybody that has a defense. Life without Joe Moorhead hasn't been good so far. You know, when you look at Ohio State's defense, I know it's down a notch. They gave up nearly 6.5 yards per play to Oregon State. We're outgained on a yards per play basis by TCU. Nick Bosa is out, but you do get stud linebacker Tuff Borland back. I mean, he's been on a pitch count. That's not going to be the case here. You get Robert Landers, the big defensive tackle back. So we're going to need to see Penn State's offense show improvement. And suddenly, maybe they can get the ground game going. There's some opportunity there. That's where Ohio State's been had a little bit on the defensive side of the ball. They're giving up some runs. But Trace McSorley is going to have to be a factor here. His arm is going to have to play a role as well.
You mentioned their ability to run. Miles Sanders so far this season, just shy of 500 yards on 71 attempts, but you did hit on a key absence from that Ohio State defense. And Dusty, when you watch the Buckeyes, how do you even go about replacing an elite level pass rusher in the form of Nick Bosa that BetOnline.ag actually has as one of the favorites to be a top overall pick in next year's draft?
Yeah, I was going to say, he might be the best player in college football this year. I mean, we saw his presence felt against TCU, the sack fumble that resulted in a touchdown. He's such a relentless pass rusher. Also, what he gives you in the run game, being able to penetrate and just really make life on opposing offenses extremely difficult. So how do you replace that? I mean, you don't. I mean, Ohio State's very talented along the defensive line. When you're talking about replacing maybe the perennial top pass rusher in America, it's just not going to happen. And, you know, Penn State needs that because they need Trace McSorley to be clean, to be able to complete a higher percentage of his passes. He's just over 54% completion so far this year. And I think that he's going to need to have a big day. The one thing about Penn State, they've ran the football extremely well so far, guys. They're best in the Big Ten and number 10 in the country, running the ball 275 yards a game. Miles Sanders coming off a monster game, over 200 yards and 3 touchdowns. They're going to need to try to run the football, establish a run game, and if they can set up play action pass and take their shots down the field, to me, that's a recipe that Penn State wants to have in this matchup. And don't sleep on Trace McSorley, the runner, either. He's had an increased role and his ability to run the football just eclipsed 1,000 yards in his career. So I think the path to getting the passing game going down the field is with being able to pound and run the football against that Ohio State defense. But you're not replacing Nick Bosa. That dude's an absolute stud, and it's going to be a presence felt in a negative way for that Ohio State defense on Saturday night.
And these two teams, both 9th and 10th in the country, respectively, Ohio State and Penn State, in terms of net yards per play, both coming in shy of 3 yards. And Payne, you do more reading when it comes down to this business than anybody I know in the space. And I uncovered a quote, and I kind of wanted to get your take and maybe unpack it a little bit. This coming from Urban Meyer, I called him, of course, being Dwayne Haskins, driving home with the message, just stay focused. We've had some pretty high-profile guys around here, and I've seen it go both ways. One thing about Columbus, Ohio, and the irony in all this not lost on me, obviously, is this is the show, and players become bigger than life, but he's a really humble guy. He's a very conscientious guy, comes from a great family, so he's been great so far. Do we think that Urban's at all worried about how Dwayne Haskins is going to handle this environment, or that things could look a little bit different, knowing Urban is typically slightly more conservative than what we've seen under Ryan Day's leadership?
You know, I think he's a little bit nervous, right? This is their first true road game. And as talented as Haskins is, it's a tough environment. But he's showing confidence, right? Because you have to love what the Buckeyes offense is doing right now. It's more vertical than most Urban offenses we've seen, which can be more side to side, run your quarterback. So he's showing confidence in his quarterback. I wouldn't take that quote too negatively. You look at Ohio State, what they're doing on the offensive side of the ball, 58% of offensive snaps are grading successful. That's second in the country. They're finishing drives. Once they get in that scoring zone inside the opponent's 40-yard line, they're averaging 6 points per trip. They're not getting stopped in the green zone. They're not settling for field goals. They're finishing drives with touchdowns at a ridiculous clip. And I think when you look at Penn State's defense, they've lost 8 starters from a season ago. We've seen massive regression there. The Nittany Lions defense is having a tough time stopping the run. Outside the top 70 in both rushing success rate defense and explosive run defense, they're only 2% better than the national average in passing efficiency defense. So this Penn State stop unit has a tall task Saturday night, even if it is at home against a young quarterback.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because when we started breaking down this game, the total was 71, the total now 72.5. meaning this number has moved a full touchdown since it opened. So should see some fireworks at Beaver Stadium if you believe what the betting market is telling you. And keep these interesting nuggets in mind. Penn State over their last 30 football games, 21-9 against the spread. They've been even better than that, or damn near close to it in league play, 14-6 against Big Ten opponents over their last 20 games. From what'll be hostile.
Hey, Todd.
Yeah, fire away, Dustin.
If you want some nuggets, I got a couple of nuggets here that I find interesting. Go back to 2016 when Ohio State loses there at Beaver Stadium to Penn State. Prior to that, James Franklin was 18-14. Since then, he's 22-3, and he's 15-2 in Big Ten games. So that win right there was a signature win for James Franklin, for that program, and best believe they've got this one circled. I also think it's interesting. Ohio State comes in with a 9-game winning streak, where Penn State comes in with an 8-game winning streak in a game that's going to see the two top scoring offenses in college football. I would be shocked. We had 24-21 2 years ago, 39-38 last year. And both in those games, the team that wins, they have to come from double-digit deficits in the second half. Would not shock me if we saw something very similar in a very close contested ball game on Saturday night.
I was trying to do this whole breakdown without mention of last year's Penn State-Ohio State game. It still sits with me, Dusty, having laid six with the Buckeyes, wondering how much different that game could have gone had they not been done in by turnovers. But it's always interesting. We talk about how special teams can change the momentum. In the case of Penn State, as you alluded to back in 2016, it's changed the momentum not only of that game, but the entire program. So fascinating matchup here. And I think obviously the winner of this game has an inside track to representing the Big Ten East in the conference championship. A game in Lubbock that I think is a lot more intriguing now than it would have been this same time last week, on the heels of Texas Tech's outright upset of Oklahoma State in Stillwater game. They won 41-17 as 14-point underdogs. We look at this number here, and we've seen money come in on the home pup. Texas Tech now a 3.5-point dog at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 77. West Virginia won a season ago, 46-35. And Dusty, I guess when we talk about these two Big 12 teams, big-time aspirations here, but has Texas Tech effectively found their starting quarterback, given how well Alan Bowman has played over a limited sample size?
Yeah, the true freshman Alan Bowman's been fantastic, and maybe the best thing that happened in Texas Tech season is that in the season opener against Ole Miss, the game that I called, is that McLean Carter, the starting quarterback, the lefty that had a bit of a rag arm, he got hurt. Because then it came Alan Bowman, and all of a sudden, like second half, I'm kind of watching like, man, this kid's kind of got some stuff. And he's just lit the world on fire now that it's been his job. And he's really got a good grasp of this offense. Ball comes up quick. He's got a plan. He knows where to go. And, you know, going into the season, they wanted to be a running team that leaned on their defense. And I think that was because they didn't think they had a quarterback. Well, Cliff Kingsbury knows he has a quarterback now, and this offense is over 620 yards per game leading college football. Just really impressive what I've seen with him. I think an interesting aspect of this game is the coaching matchups, guys. You know, I don't know if you guys know this, but the Spavital brothers are both coordinators in this game. Jake Spavital is the offensive coordinator at West Virginia, calls the plays. Zach Spavital, the co-defensive coordinator with David Gibbs there at Texas Tech. So it's kind of the Spavital Bowl. And then within that, you've also got a coaching dynamic that I find intriguing. Cliff Kingsbury played quarterback when Dana Holgorsen was a wide receivers coach as well as an offensive coordinator. Dana also hired Cliff at Houston to be his offensive coordinator. So the familiarity between these two teams in this matchup is really off the charts. I mean, you can't imagine anyone's going to be surprised based off what they see. And I would imagine both of these teams are going to be ready to play and have a good feel for what's coming on the opposite side. But, you know, that as you mentioned, that Texas Tech offense, it was lifeless against Ole Miss in week number one, and boy, did it come alive ever since then. I also like the fact that they're running the football, guys. DeMarcus Felton, 130 yards last week in Stillwater, and you've got Henry, the other running back, went for over 100 against Houston. So they're finding some balance, 5 returning starters on that offensive line, and right now that Texas Tech offense is really playing at a high clip.
And when we talk about Alan Bowman, obviously Texas Tech didn't know he was going to be the guy coming into the season. Of course, West Virginia knew Will Grier was going to be their pivot, and we've seen his odds to win the Heisman Trophy drop considerably. But Payne, when we try and figure out Texas Tech's offense matching up against West Virginia's defense, the Mountaineers haven't seen a passing attack anything close to this. I'll make the case they haven't seen a passing attack, period, through their first 3 games of the season. And do they rue the day that the Hurricane canceled their contest against NC State? Because I feel like going up against Ryan Finley and company would have been a nice litmus test as they encounter Texas Tech's aerial attack.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question about that. And I think Dusty hit on this pretty good. But when you look at Kingsbury, it's like he's doing it again, right? He came into this season with 10 straight years where his offense finished top 25 in efficiency. We thought with McLean Carter, that streak would get snapped. But since he went to the bullpen, so to speak, and inserted Alex Bowman, like things are just flying high. That true freshman completing 72% of his passes. He's averaging 8.3 yards per attempt. He's been very efficient. 51% of the Red Raiders plays are grading successful. They're finishing drives. When I look at this, though, for Texas Tech, I think there's still meat on the bone for that offense, right? The offensive line, you know, has been good, but they're also just allowing too many, you know, plays in and around the backfield. 23% of all runs right now are being stuffed at or behind the line of scrimmage. So I still think this Texas Tech offense has meat on the bone. They can continue to improve here.
And when you look at, these two teams, the amount of playmakers, it really is a wealth of riches. Obviously, West Virginia's receiving corps, one of the best in the country. When you talk about Marcus Sims, David Sills, and Gary Jennings, all 240-plus yards receiving, 15-plus catches so far this season. And oh, by the way, 10 touchdowns between them. Dusty, if you're on one of these defenses or you're a defensive coordinator and you're sitting in team meetings, what are you telling your team to get ready for this matchup with a total so high, knowing that stops are going to be at a premium? Is it all about trying to force turnovers and going high risk, high reward, just looking to try and get two or three stops and going, that's all it's going to take to win this thing?
Third down stops, okay, takeaways, and red zone defense. That's what you got to have. You can't worry about yards. You're going to get yards, right? I mean, Will Greer is going to find some of those targets that you referenced, and they're going to move the football. But on big third downs, are you getting off the field and getting your offense the ball back? Are you taking the ball away to get your offense back? And more importantly, when they get inside the 20s, can you step up and can you force field goals instead of touchdowns? That's going to be the difference in this game, and that's how you really grade in the Big 12 today, quality defense. Total yards, I think it's overrated stat. What isn't an overrated stat, are you getting off the field and are you limiting offenses when they get in the red area? And I got to tell you, what I want to know is who is this Texas Tech defense? Because they were very excited with 10 starters coming back before the year began, and they got lit week number one against Ole Miss, right? They come back, they pitch a shutout week number two against a nobody. Then Houston comes to town, scores 49 over 600 yards of offense. Then they go into Stillwater last week, and they shut them down, guys. Oklahoma State was held scoreless the final 40 minutes of that game, and I watched the entire tape. From the first snap, Jordan Brooks was downhill. It was physical. It was in your face, and they brought it all night long. A key guy on this defense, Jashawn Johnson, the safety. He kind of is the straw that stirs the drink for the Texas Tech defense. He's had to miss three games already. He's dealing with a shoulder injury, but in the two games he has played, this defense is much, much improved. He's supposed to be a go on Saturday, and they need him mightily against this highly potent West Virginia aerial attack led by Will Greer.
One last thing on this game, Payne, and I want to close here. This number we've seen trending towards a field goal, is there any chance it gets as low as a true three from the soft 3.5 we're seeing at betonline.ag?
Oof, it's a good question. I'm not going to have a play on this game, but I kind of lean West Virginia here. And I think it's just because we expect West Virginia's offense to be potent. You know, we know how good they were last year, but another year in this system under Will Greer's watch, and his offense is operating at a ridiculous clip right now. 57% of offensive snaps are grading successful. That's a 13% increase year over year. And we knew they were good last year. The one thing that Dusty mentioned here is about getting stops once you get in the green zone. And sometimes we have seen, you know, these explosive spread offenses, they start to bog down when the space is limited. That hasn't been the case for West Virginia this season, averaging over 5.5 points per trip inside opponent green zones. I think West Virginia is going to score here at will, but certainly, you know, you have to be encouraged by Texas Tech's defensive effort last week. They allowed Oklahoma State's offense just to grade successful on 40% of their snaps. So this is going to be a big matchup here. Wouldn't be shocked to see this movement. A little bit of the phony version here. I think we're going to see at some point some money on West Virginia come back.
I think this is a good number. I think this is a good number, guys, because I think it's going to be close. I do think Texas Tech is going to show up and play. Remember, they led by 11 last year in Morgantown, right? Now, now West Virginia came back, and Wilger had a big second half, and they were able to pull away with the win. But again, this is Texas Tech's got a good feel for what West Virginia is and what they want to do. And I don't know if you guys have been to Lubbock, because I have. Okay, if the wind's blowing the wrong way, it smells like manure because they got the stockyards out there. And I'll tell you this, you best be ready on the sidelines because the Texas Tech crazies, they throw tortillas, okay? So if you're over there standing around, watch out for flying tortillas when the Red Raiders score. So it gets a little bit crazy in Lubbock. I'm just telling. Just letting you know.
Dusty, can I ask you something?
Fire away, King.
Yeah, Dusty, when you look at this, you mentioned all that familiarity between the two teams, and certainly like when we have these spread offenses and they face defenses that aren't used to it, we see points aplenty. Is this one of those tricky spots where you'd maybe be looking under because both defenses see spread offenses at practice all day and plus all that familiarity you mentioned? Is this a sneaky under potentially?
It could be. It's just so scary, right? Because these are potent offenses and they are, at least I would say with Texas Tech, I don't know what you are defensively, but I think your point is well made. The defenses should be in good position to make plays. The question is, will they actually make plays? I would probably, if I was going to give an opinion, give a lean, I would probably still say the over just because when these things start going, man, these shootouts in the Big 12 happen, the points just start flying. So I don't really have a great opinion either way, but even though, yeah, there is familiarity, man, it just seems like these things can turn to a track meet, and all of a sudden if teams are missing tackles, look out, the scoreboard is going to get lit up.
And if anyone was wondering, I can't speak for you, Payne. I have never set foot in Lubbock, Texas, and I have no real interest to do so anytime soon. No offense to our loyal Texas
Tech
listeners.
You don't like the smell
listeners.
Of manure? Come on, man.
You know, Dusty,
it's
when
beautiful
I moved to,
on a Saturday morning.
When I moved to...
Nothing like manure with my Tostitos and whatever else they're throwing.
No, tortillas, flour tortillas in the dome, man. Watch out.
When I, you know, it's funny. When I actually moved to Vegas, there's a pig farm up on the north side of town, and I know exactly what that manure smell can be. As you mentioned, when the wind blows. So I used to go for runs in the morning. That was overpowering and intoxicating, not in a good way whatsoever. But I feel like that's the perfect transition and segue, guys, to Starkville, Mississippi, where Mississippi State is playing host to the Florida Gators, the Dan Mullen Bowl, if you will. Mississippi State, a 7.5-point favorite for this game at betonline.ag, total on the game 51. And all of a sudden, it's the Kentucky Wildcats, the common denominator, having wreaked havoc on both these seasons. Payne, you look at the way things have started in Gainesville for Dan Mullen. I don't know if anybody's all that excited about some of their defensive performances thus far.
You know, listen, I think Dan Mullen's a great coach. There's going to have to be some performance on the field to help him in recruiting. That's, I think, where he's struggling just a little bit. But I like what Dan Mullen's done. Quietly, he's boosted Florida this year. You know, I know if they walk away with a loss here Saturday to Mississippi State, 3-2 isn't what the Gator hopeful kind of signed up for, but the product on the field, I can tell you, is more organized. It's more efficient. I know Florida hasn't hit the tough part of the schedule yet, but right now through 4 weeks, Mullen's offense has been successful on 48% of its snaps. That's a 10% increase year over year. And I think why that's impressive is, you know, Felipe Franks, he still has clear limitations. And I think you just want to imagine this offense once Mullen gets his quarterback in here. Right now, 105th in completion rate. Felipe Franks is going to have to be a factor here. That Bulldogs front hasn't stopped the run as consistently as you would have hoped for. But man, they create some chaos around the line of scrimmage, 6th in stuff rate. So you'd think Mississippi State's game plan is to make Franks beat him with his arm. I'm not sure we're going to see that.
Yeah, Dan Mullen, an interesting comment. When I think of the fans and I think of the former players and the people of the town of Starkville, I think for the most part they were appreciative in what we were able to accomplish in the 9 years we were there. I don't know if that will show on Saturday night. I can't imagine they're going to roll out the red carpet. And Dusty, when I look at these two teams, and I mentioned it earlier, both have a common denominator, a loss to Kentucky, a program that you know all too well from some of your ties to the Stoops family. Which was a more disappointing loss? Mississippi State was shut out, scoring 7 points last weekend down there in Lexington, or a couple weeks ago when Florida saw their domination over the Wildcats come to an end. And is there anything we've gleaned from a common opponent that we think will be on display this particular weekend?
Well, before I answer that question, can I just stand and give a standing ovation? Huh? How about Marky Stoops with a big win this weekend in the top 25? I'm happy for my man out there in Lexington. But the answer, the most disappointing or the most shocking for me, it was Mississippi State, man. I mean, I watched this team in Manhattan, and I thought this team was legit. Defensive line, offensive line. You know, the question I had was, can Nick Fitzgerald pick up this Joe Moorhead offense, the concepts, the passing game? The answer to that has been no, okay? He has not been very good. He's barely over 50% completing his passes, so he has not adhered well to what Joe Moorhead is selling. And my biggest problem with what I saw on Saturday, where's Kylan Hill, right? Why is Kylan Hill not getting touches? The guy's averaging over 8.5 yards per carry, yet he's not getting a run. And Mississippi State, if they can't run the football, they're going to have problems, right? They run for just 56 yards against Kentucky. Give them a lot of credit. You know, Florida on the other side, they've really been feast or famine with the turnovers. They lead the country with 14 takeaways. They had 6 against Tennessee is what helped them get that big victory. But 10 of those are fumble recoveries. So I don't want to act like we shouldn't give them credit for that. There is an art to knocking the ball out, ripping at the football. First guy holds him up. Second guy comes in and knocks it out. So you give a defense credit. But some of those could be just fortunate and could be lucky. So a big key for me is Mississippi State. Ball security and getting Kylan Hill the football. I think that Mississippi State's offense runs the football more effectively here against Florida, and I would expect Joe Moorhead doesn't put Nick Fitzgerald in too many compromising situations. You know, as far as Florida's offense, I think you got to give a ton of credit to Dan Mullen. He's getting the most out of Felipe Franks, and I think you'd look no further than just the decision-making. Last year, he's 9 touchdowns to 8 picks. This year, he's 12-2. He's just a smarter football player, knowing where to go with the ball and not making mistakes. And that you can say a lot about that. I just look at this, and I think Montez Sweat with 4.5 sacks, 7 tackles for loss. Jeffrey Simmons, 7.5 tackles for loss, leads the SEC in tackles behind the line of scrimmage. I think those two guys are too much. I think that they're going to slow down the three-headed monster at running back and P. Ryan Scarlett and Pierce. And much like you, I would dare Felipe Franks to prove to me that he is a much improved passer. So I'm loading up the box if I'm Bob Shoop. I'm allowing my defensive line to pin its ears back, play on the other side of the football. And if Felipe Franks, if he can beat me with his arm, he's going to have to prove it to me.
Payne, it's a good thing here in Dusty standing ovation for what they're doing in Lexington that we didn't elect to go with the Kentucky-South Carolina game and try and tell Dusty that we're not sure that Kentucky's going to have the same success this weekend with the Gamecocks as they had last week on Mississippi State.
You vetoed that. I wanted that game, and you said, hey, let's go Syracuse.
I wanted to see, you know, one question.
You're hooking me up, man. I've seen both games, Payne. Come on.
One question I wanted to ask, and either of you can answer it, and it's just a tough time figuring out which intangible factor means more. Is it Mississippi State's motivation here where they kind of feel, hey, they might not have been good enough for Dan Mullen and Todd Grantham, who left the Bulldog program and players to pursue greener pastures? Or is it that familiarity? Does that give Florida an edge? You know, Todd Grantham's defense went against Nick Fitzgerald at practice every day. Dan Mullen knows every single tendency of every player on that Bulldog roster that's worth a damn. So I'm having a tough time. Which intangible edge do you guys think will play a bigger factor here?
Dusty, I would say I'll let you take the floor, having been a former player.
I think motivation, it gets overplayed at times, right? Because I think motivation is a great key in getting you focused throughout the week of preparation, getting you motivated pregame. But once that ball's kicked, I mean, middle of the third quarter, when Mississippi State's down in their stance, are they going to be thinking about how Dan Mullen's not on their sideline anymore? Or are they going to be thinking about how I need to whoop the guy across from his butt? I mean, you know what I mean? So I think that kind of gets overblown a little bit. I do think it can help you, you know, as you get ready, as you prepare, as you work, more focused throughout the week of practice, maybe a little more physicality. So I think that's real from the Mississippi State side. I would say from the other side, they understand the personnel, strengths, and weaknesses. But scheme's different. Scheme's different defensively. Scheme's right. Different offensively. So from that aspect, I mean, you can learn a lot about players just by watching their tape. Clearly, Dan Mullen, Todd Grantham, they're gonna know these players and how to put them in compromising situations. So maybe you give a slight edge there. But I don't think any probably massively more so than what you can pick up on the tape. So I don't know. I know it's going to be an emotional game, and it's a great talking point. It's a great storyline. I would say that the fans, this will affect the fans more than affect the actual players on the field. I think that fan base is going to really feel scorned from Dan Mullen leaving and basically saying that Starkville isn't Gainesville. It's not good enough. So I can see the crowd being an added element. But as far as the actual play on the field, I'm just not putting a whole lot of stock that it swings the pendulum one way or the other.
This will, of course, be Florida's first trip to Starkville since 2009. And Payne, kind of piggybacking what Dusty said, I don't think it matters as much once the game starts, but I do agree that when you talk about all these Mississippi State players who felt spurned by their coach, you're going to spend that extra half hour to hour going through your play calls, maybe watching a little more tape. And plus, you have the bad taste in your mouth from what transpired last weekend. I think they come out filled with piss and vinegar. You're going to see Nick Fitzgerald at his best. Now, if he grasps the offense, that remains to be seen. But you'll see a much more physically imposing rushing attack against a Florida defense that's allowed 156 or more yards on the ground three times this season. And Florida last weekend, I watched that game. I actually went back and watched it more than I should have against Tennessee. I mean, they were the beneficiary of more Tennessee ineptitude than anything else. 47 points despite only 14 first downs and less than 400 yards. I don't think they'll be so fortunate this weekend, but what should be a great game for two teams who desperately need a win.
That's the bigger factor, Todd Furman. You're exactly right. I think what we saw last week, having to watch that garbage film that they put out there against Kentucky, that's a bigger motivating factor for me as a player than my coach who decided he didn't want to be here anymore. Because what I think is still a quality Mississippi State team, what they put on film last week against Kentucky, boy, I bet that was a long week in the meeting rooms.
It's one of those things, and a game that I think adds all the elements that you want to kick back, watch, and learn quite a bit about these teams as they get into the thick of their conference schedule. From conference games with massive impact to a game that could have major ramifications as far as the college football is concerned, Saturday night from South Bend, where it's the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, a 5.5-point favorite at betonline.ag, total of 54 as the Stanford Cardinal come a-calling. Saturday's game on NBC will be the first time these two schools have met when both were in the AP Top 10. Stanford and Notre Dame last played undefeated record-wise the 1925 Rose Bowl. Payne, Notre Dame finally made the move we thought was inevitable, going from Brandon Wimbush to Ian Book, despite Coach Kelly not officially announcing Book the starting quarterback this week. But how much scarier does it make this Notre Dame football team that we knew was good defensively but was going to have some offensive limitations with a one-dimensional attack?
Ian Book, baby. I mean, I've been banging the table for a month now. And I know many, you know, got a hard on seeing Wimbush luck box his way to a win against Michigan, and everyone left thinking he was a better passer. But if you actually watched the All-22, you would have realized Wimbush's first drive against Michigan, he throws that deep seam where his receiver does a great job pretending to be a defensive back and breaks up an interception. That second possession where they're backed up in their own end on third down, Wimbush throws up a 50-50 ball where the receiver just makes a ridiculous play and the safety gets ejected for targeting in the process. And then that deep post touchdown, it was late, it was underthrown, and it likely gets broken up or picked like 97 out of 100 times, but the walk-on pulls a Randy Moss. You have 4 minutes to go in the first half on a screen pass. Wimbush put one right in the belly of a Michigan defensive lineman. It was dropped. Realistically, Wimbush could have had four picks in the first half of the Michigan game. Instead, he has zero. Ian Book was fantastic last week. Notre Dame averaged 7.5 yards per play. That was nearly 2 yards better than any other Notre Dame performance this season. 58% of offenses plays graded successful. This was the right move going to Ian Book, and Brian Kelly is damn lucky he doesn't. He still has a zero in his loss column because I think he got away with making the wrong decision at the most important position for about a full month.
And you look at Notre Dame's schedule. I mean, right now, what appeared to be one of the more difficult schedules on paper, they get through this week unscathed against Stanford. They're at Virginia Tech next week, a Hokies team searching for an identity, and at USC to close out the regular season. I'm not going to call Notre Dame one of the best teams in the country, but all of a sudden, they're very much a playoff contender. And Dusty, when you look at this Notre Dame team, Stanford, of course, the unenviable spot of traveling across the country on the heels of a luck box victory against Oregon. But I ask you this, when is David Shaw going to join the 21st century and realize, hey, I have a quarterback that's more than capable of spreading teams out. I can throw the football to set up the run instead of running into 9, 10, and 11 man stack boxes and Bryce Love going for 4.3 yards per carry and an offensive attack rushing wise that's pretty pedestrian so far this season?
Well, it's who they are, right? It's their mindset. It's their mentality. They want to establish the line of scrimmage. They want to get their running back going, and it sets up their play action pass, get multiple tight ends involved. But you're right. They have not run the football effectively this year. Bryce Love has not been fully healthy. They're not getting the push with the offensive line. And they do have a legitimate quarterback. And they've got Arcega Whiteside, who's turned into a phenomenal receiver this year. Two more touchdown grabs up at Autzen Stadium this weekend. So that'll be interesting to see. Do we see more first down passing from Shaw this week as they play a really good Notre Dame team? I think that would be smart. That would be in vogue. But, you know, I don't know. Again, he's kind of set in who they are and what they want to be and how they want to go about their business. But I've been unbelievably impressed with KJ Costello throughout the course of this season. You can even take it back to the end of last year. I was impressed with him in a losing effort against USC in the Pac-12 championship. Just his ability to throw players open, the big arm that he has, and he's got weapons on the outside. I love this matchup, guys. I really think it's going to a very evenly matched game. I thought that Ian Book, he takes that offense to another level. It sounds like Notre Dame is going to get their star-studded running back, Dexter Williams, back this week. He's going to add some explosion to that offense. He's going to be fresh and ready to go. I think that the travel element in this is real. Right, I mean, I think going all the way up there in that late game at Autzen Stadium and how much energy it took to find a way to get that victory. By the way, it was one of my picks this week. Don't know how it was a winner, but we'll take it every single time. but I just think that to ask them to do that and that you've got, you know, you're probably not even getting back on the field till Monday, if not Tuesday, and you're back in an airplane, you're flying back to Middle America. I just think this is really setting up well for Notre Dame. You know, they got a very impressive win against Wake Forest. They didn't have to, you know, expel too much energy in that game. And I think that they are going to be ready to go. The one area that I think Stanford has, if they're going to go into Notre Dame and they're going to pull off an upset, their defensive line has got to take over. They've had 13 sacks this year. They're really good up front within their front seven. I think getting pressure on Ian Book, not allowing him to get comfortable, is going to be a huge key. Because I don't know what you guys thought, but when Justin Herbert, who I was blown away with through about the first 3.5 quarters in that game, he was throwing BBs out there. When he had time to deliver the football, he was picking that Stanford Cardinals secondary apart. If they give Ian Book time, that'll be problematic. So the Stanford pass rush better step up in this matchup.
We may have more to say about Justin Herbert later on this podcast, but we'll get to that when we have the chance. But what's always interesting, guys, I mean, David Shaw recognizing, I mean, this was his quote coming into this week. "We went into the year knowing teams will try to stop our runner, and rightfully so. We have to be ready for teams who say, I don't want 20 to beat us. We have to be sure that when someone is blocked, they stay blocked." Like, if you know this going in, it's just still mind-boggling to me that you're not throwing, trying to set the defense up. And Payne, you've actually been down on Stanford's defense, not only this season, but you weren't impressed with what you saw last year either.
No, I wasn't. And listen, when you look at the entire landscape here, right, the Stanford offense, we've been hammering this for a year and a half. We've been hammering this last week when we broke down the Oregon game. You know, Stanford's offense is just inept right now because of the play calling. And I get they averaged 8 yards per play against Oregon last week, but they didn't start moving the ball until they passed on early downs, as Dusty alluded to. I don't care how good your O-line is. I don't care how explosive Bryce Love is. There's a reason right now only 34% of the offensive snaps are grading successful for Stanford. That's 110th in the country. They're 113th in rushing efficiency. They're 120th in offensive stuff rate. It's just too predictable. There isn't a reason in the world with KJ Costello, you're not passing more on first down. You're not passing on first down to Bryce Love. He's got 4 catches total through 4 games. A dynamic weapon like that, it's just inexcusable, right? Get him the ball in space. There's not a linebacker or a safety that can cover him in space, and you're going to keep him healthier, right? Like, one man tackling him in space rather than repeatedly have him just ram his head into stacked boxes. Like, that's just pure stupidity. The one thing that I think there's an edge here when it comes to this game, Notre Dame, when you look at what they can potentially do, Stanford's defense was on the field for 82 snaps a week ago at Oregon. And Dusty mentioned this, the trip across the country, the different time zones. I would think Stanford's D could show some signs of fatigue at some point this week.
I mean, does Notre Dame, Payne, in your opinion, have the pieces and the ability to kind of go tempo and put Stanford on its heels right from the opening snap?
You certainly could if you wanted to now that you have Ian Book, right? He's a distributor to the football. He's going to know where to go with it. He's going to get it out quick. I like the weapons outside for Notre Dame. They're going to get an explosive running back back. The offensive line has performed better than we thought, right? You lose two guys that go to the NFL and your offensive line coach, but so far the Notre Dame offensive line has done pretty well. So I think you go tempo early. You wear out that Stanford defense. 82 snaps is a ton. Dusty, you've been on the field. If you had 82 snaps in a game, what is it looking like the following week?
It better be looking like an easy week of practice because I'm going to be tired as you know what, man.
Yeah, I mean, this
game is going to be hurting.
This game should be great, guys. I mean, for a lot of the reasons you mentioned, as we try and figure out these teams and they try and figure out themselves, it's always fascinating to see how the market responds. We've obviously seen early indications that Notre Dame attracting some money and a little bit of over money as well, despite some public support for the Cardinal. So we shall see how this thing plays out before kickoff on Saturday night. But last but not least, Dusty, you're on the call for a game we didn't break down in great detail right in your backyard, as you mentioned, where Oklahoma is a massive favorite against the Baylor Bears. Oklahoma needing to survive last week, probably the best adjective we can use to describe their performance against Army, as 4 touchdown-plus favorites in overtime. And Baylor, they finally got things going offensively against Kansas. What should we expect this weekend in Norman?
Well, Army, first of all, I think another standing ovation. I mean, the performance that they had in Norman, Oklahoma last week, I thought was fantastic. Almost 45 minutes time of possession. I mean, it was 3 yards in a cloud of dust at its finest. And Oklahoma just couldn't come up with stops. And I love the fact that they completely cleaned the visiting locker room spotless and took a picture on the way out. They basically said, we came in, gave you our best shot, and it was a pretty damn good shot. And oh, by the way, we clean up our mess before we exit. I thought that was – I got a lot of respect for Jeff Munkin and what they're doing there with that Army program. The question I have is about this Oklahoma defense, guys. I mean, I think that's been a question for quite some time now. They looked really good and much improved the first couple of weeks, playing the other side of the football, playing fast, playing physical. Then against Iowa State, they couldn't tackle Lakeem Butler. They couldn't tackle David Montgomery. They started becoming, much like last year, very suspect in the tackling department. And then, yeah, last week, it was more just about kind of getting mushed, right? And that's a different kind of offense. But I also saw not great effort when I watched the tape. I saw not great tackling and really just leverage, right? Knowing where to be, how to fit certain runs and be in your gap. I know it's different with the option, but those are all things that no matter who you're playing, you better play at a high level. So my question is with the Oklahoma defense. I thought coming into the year they were improved. More depth on the defensive line. I thought the linebacking core would be better. Still had some questions on the back end of the defense with some youth back there, but I thought they'd be better. I think it's a real question mark. And the one thing about Baylor so far, Charlie Brewer, true sophomore, he took over at the end of last year. He's been really good. Kind of a dual threat guy. He's not an explosive runner, but he's an adequate runner. You have to respect his ability to run the football. He beat up Kansas last week on the ground. And I think the biggest point of emphasis for the Oklahoma defense is Baylor has big targets outside. Jalen Hurd, I know you remember that name, former running back, 5-star running back at Tennessee who transferred. He's now a receiver. Now, they'll still put him in the backfield on some short yardage stuff, but tackling him out in space with smaller cornerbacks for Oklahoma is going to be a question mark. And Denzel Mims, another 6'3", 210-plus-pound receiver who's long, who goes up and gets the football, who scorched Oklahoma a year ago. Can they cover these guys? And I think more importantly, when these big receivers get the ball in their hands, can they tackle out in open space? I do think Baylor defensively is an improved unit. You can tell Matt Rhule, his emphasis is on this team, the physicality. They're running to the football. I just don't think they have great players yet, but they're an improved group. I do think this Oklahoma offense is extremely explosive, extremely dynamic, even without Rodney Anderson. I had a chance to spend a little time with Kyler Murray yesterday, and as I break down his tape, I knew the kid would be good. I didn't think he'd be this good this quick. And he's a phenomenal athlete that in the open space, just watch out. He's as dynamic as anybody in college football. I'm not going to say he's the most accurate passer, but he throws a really good ball, comes out clean out of his hand, quick release, excellent touch on the deep ball. And he had a bad throw to start the second half, which was interception. But for the most part, he's made really good decisions. And he's got weapons with CeeDee Lamb, Marquise Brown, Grant Calcaterra, and one of the better offensive lines in college football. So I think Oklahoma's offense is going to have quite a bit of success. What I don't know is if Oklahoma's defense is going to be able to get enough stops for this to be blowout city in Norman on Saturday.
12:30 Pacific, 3:30 Eastern. Dusty will be on the call for Baylor and Oklahoma. Dusty, I tell you, safe travels, but I don't think you're going to have to go all that far. Enjoy having the entire crew over to the Dvorak Manor in Fine Norman, and we'll catch you up with you next week, my friend.
Hey, very good. Always a pleasure being with you fine folks. And again, you can follow me on Twitter at Dusty Dvorak. I love being a part of Bet the Board podcast. I'm going to say this every week because the different people that reach out to me, whether it be on my crew, friends in my personal life that say, oh my God, you're on Bet the Board podcast. This thing is big time, people. So I would say this to you fine folks. Follow me on Twitter if you're not already doing so. You'd be smart to do it. Tell your friends, tell your family. They need to be listening to Bet the Board podcast each and every week.
It's got to be nice, Payne, when you're in Dusty's business, and while you know it comes with the territory to be out on the road, when you get that rare home game, and look at Dusty rolling out the red carpet and hospitality for all the fine ESPN folks this weekend.
That's probably pretty fun. I know you mentioned he had 4 games in 8 days on the road, so that gets to be tough when you get to sleep in your own bed. Seem to have a little more energy this week, and I'm sure that went hand in hand.
I do feel I missed an excellent opportunity for either a prop bet or to speculate. I wonder what he's putting on the menu. I'm going to have to pick his brain a little bit and find out when you're serving that many, you know, what you roll out there to show that good old Oklahoma hospitality.
My feeling is this is the good reason to have the wife in case you are hosting a load of people. You don't have to worry about the meal and the fixings. Oh, this is where
that,
it comes
that,
into.
That won't get us in too much trouble with our female listeners. I just need a wife around to try and prepare meals and keep things a happy home.
Hey, you know.
I appreciate you giving credit where credit is due, but we still have some other business to attend to. He joins us every Wednesday here on the Bet the Board podcast. Same time, same place. You can, of course, follow him on Twitter at DaveMasonBOL. And Dave, I know you'll be gloating about the National Football League performance when we chat with you tomorrow, but how did College Football Week 4 treat you boys at betonline.ag?
It was decent. Nothing compared to NFL, as you mentioned. It was a small win for the house, so, you know, nothing great, but that's fine. The action was great, the overall action. The house, we won big on Texas, Old Dominion, UConn. Those were our biggest winners. The players scored on Ohio State, Clemson, and Georgia was a big one. So overall, great action, small win for the house, so we'll take it.
The action was actually up last week, despite not a lot of marquee games, Dave?
Compared to the previous week, no. But it was better than I expected. You know, it'll go down a little bit, up and down, up and down. But, you know, we beat the players the week before, so some players might fall off. And like you said, they're one of the main marquee games last weekend. But the action was still good, better than I expected. This weekend will be through the roof.
Yeah, and when we look at week 5, lots of big games. You got Syracuse and Clemson, 2 undefeated ACC teams. The big night game, Ohio State, Penn State. Have we seen any early sharp action at this point?
Plenty, plenty. As of an hour ago, Buffalo -6.5. They're up to -9. Temple +14. They're +14, -130. Kentucky pick. They're now -1.5. A&M -17.5. They're up to 20.5. Ole Miss +13. They're down to +12. USC -2.5. They're currently favored by a field goal. Purdue over 55. That's up to 58. Arizona State -20.5, that's up to 21.5. Indiana -15.5, that's up to -17.5. And Georgia Tech, forget that last one, sorry.
All good. And with some of these marquee games, we know the liability can ratchet up. Have we seen anything that the house is going to absolutely need in terms of too much liability on one side from the public?
Oh, yes. Plenty once again. Kentucky, their public team now, 73% on Kentucky, 84% on BYU, 76% on Purdue, Oklahoma State, 84%, LSU, 75%, USC, 82%, Michigan's a big one, 88%, Texas A&M, 87%, and that big game on Saturday night, Ohio State's getting 72% of the action, and that's going to be the biggest bet game of the day by far.
I was going to say, Dave, and I meant to ask on that, knowing that you have not only that one marquee game taking place in Happy Valley, but also Stanford and Notre Dame. Penn State, Ohio State going to dwarf the numbers that we'll see from the Irish as well?
Yeah. I mean, we're already about 2-1 bet count compared game to game on those two big ones. So
pretty incredible when you talk about two top 10 matchups, a household brand in Notre Dame just not having the same cachet as a game that is going to go a long way in terms of defining the Big Ten East. But as far as for folks, Dave, that are looking to try and get in on some of the fun, I know you guys put up your college football and NFL lines as early as anyone in the industry. What kind of promotions are available at betonline.ag, not only for new customers, but for some folks that may be looking to reload their accounts?
Yes, sir. If you do not have a betonline.ag account, head over to betonline.ag and sign up for one. Use promo code 75BTB for 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload. Max bonus is $1,000. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
He is a man that needs no introduction. You can hear him here every single Wednesday throughout the college football campaign. And if that's not enough, you can also hear him here every single Thursday during the National Football League season. Follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Dave, thanks as always for your time, man. Best of luck this weekend, my friend.
All right, boys, thanks.
Some interesting breaking news, Payne, while we were on with Dave. It appears at Clemson, not only do they have a new starting quarterback, they're going to have to be looking for a new backup quarterback as well.
Kelly Bryant just announced he's going to transfer.
Some pretty interesting comments in an interview he did with the Greenville News there. Not a total surprise, given the fact that if he had taken a single snap the rest of the season, he would have lost eligibility. And you have to imagine when you're a kid that age, you want to try and milk your college career knowing you're not going to the next level for as much as you can. So let the speculation begin. I think a lot of these programs across the country that want a mobile, efficient quarterback could do a lot worse than bringing Brian in. But it does put Dabo in a bit of a precarious predicament if something were to happen to Trevor Lawrence.
Do you know one of those teams that could use a mobile quarterback?
I mean, you could speculate a number of spots.
that would be an interesting FU to old Dabo and company. And listen,
I feel he could be a good fit for a Gulf Coast offense down in Tallahassee.
This is so tough because from what I was told was he was given a fair shake to win this job, earn it, and he ultimately did. But you just kind of wonder what was going on there. Here's the thing. I don't agree with the Bama situation. Nick's kind of milking this thing, giving Hurts an opportunity. It's a fake opportunity because once these games start to really, really matter, Tua is going to be the guy. There isn't going to be this split snap situation. There isn't going to be games where Hurts plays more than Tua. It's just not realistically going to happen. At least Dabo is, I think, just a little bit better of a human with this situation where he's going to let him walk because, God forbid, Lawrence goes down. Season's done at that point.
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to think, honestly, that Dabo making this decision was a lifeline to Kelly Bryant. Now, maybe it wasn't the case, and we're giving Dabo too much credit.
Yeah.
But you'd have to think that, all right, these are discussions, and whether or not Bryant signed on, if you didn't do enough to distance yourself from the competition, and you guys hit on it. Dusty saw Trevor Lawrence with his own eyes put on a show against Georgia Tech. You talked about how much more efficient that offense is. So just pull Kelly Bryant aside and go, hey, Kelly, we love your contributions to the program. You're obviously welcome to stay as a number two, but this is Trevor's job going forward. And should you want to transfer, hey, no hard feelings. Go play out the final year of eligibility.
Going to be interesting to see for sure moving forward there.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. And maybe another logical landing spot. You know, I don't know what Chip Kelly has in the pipeline for UCLA. I'm not sure he's an ideal fit, but just it's fun to speculate on where some of these guys that are relatively proven commodities. But we shall see going forward. But Payne, before we close up shop and bid our listeners a fond farewell this fine Wednesday morning, is there an investment that has your eye and should get our listeners to the window for the weekend?
Sure. The late game in the Pac-12, the California Golden Bears, +3. I believe it is on the FS1 network, Todd, so that's a positive.
It is. Shameless promo. We'll try and do what we can to hopefully up the ratings for not only a telecast, but lock it in as well.
Yeah, flat out. I think Cal's power rating we have higher than most. Oregon a touch lower. Cal's looking for revenge, obviously. They've lost 7 of 8, I think, in this series. They've had 2 weeks to prepare. You got Oregon coming off just a heartbreaking loss. Let's see if they can recover mentally. And I think one of the underlying factors here is fall semester started for Oregon on Monday. Classes have kind of forced the Ducks to change their practice schedule and meetings this week for the first time all season. You know, you get 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, they're creatures of habit. I think that could be a tough transition here for your first road game.
And you never want to overvalue what extra prep means, Payne, because each coach handles it a little bit differently. But when we look at some of these, you know, underlying edges that we might be able to achieve, I mean, feel like Justin Wilcox having that extra week to prepare, essentially a game, a layup against Idaho State, that this is the game they've had circled for the last couple weeks?
Oh, with no question. Like, this is the game. They've lost 7 of 8. It's one they've had circled. You get the extra time to prepare, you know. Oregon plays the extra snaps in that game going to overtime. I just think that is a tough way to lose the game. Certainly, they were all in last week against Stanford. I didn't like what I'd seen from Oregon, you know, the previous 3 weeks. And we can say whether they put stuff on film or didn't. I just didn't like what I saw. Now, obviously, Mario Cristobal's unit up front was moving dudes, was moving that Stanford defensive line. So that'll be something to monitor here. They do have the, you know, a little bit of a better ground game than I thought looking at the film the first 3 weeks. But I really like this California defense. I think the spot's good. I think the number's wrong. And I think the situation with that fall semester starting plays a little bit of a role here as well.
And naturally, you match the you mentioned the dominance for Oregon. I was on the only game Oregon lost in this series, an overtime loss, 52-49 a few years ago at the hands of Davis Webb. It's always funny how things resonate with you as a sports bettor. Can't remember your wins, but you sure as shit remember your losses. I think I had +3. It might have only taken 2.5 in that game, and the game fell 3. So not going to cry over spilled milk. We're getting the money back with the California Golden Bears this weekend. Any other parting shots, tidbits of wisdom, life advice that you want to share with our college listeners before we take a week break from one another?
No, I'm going to let this thing roll out. We'll end it here. I know you got a meeting to attend, so we'll sign off.
Best of luck this weekend. Remember, follow all of the members of the Bet the Board team at Dusty Dvorak on Twitter, at Dave Mason BOL, at Bet the Board Pod, and of course, your esteemed co-host at Payne Insider. I am at Todd Furman. Best of luck with all of your college football wagers this weekend. And come a little late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, depending on the time zone, we'll see you at the window.